will be oil and gas that will continue to be developed. What we're doing here is we're putting the wild land wilderness characteristic values of these lands on the same platform.
Gauging the value of wilderness. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 23rd of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, using truancy laws to help kids stay in school.
We want to make sure that students get off to a good start academically, and that's very difficult if they're behind because they've missed so much school by second grade or third grade.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. It's almost time to file online for your PFD, and when you do, you can make an impact by sharing just a little with a cause you care about. Celebrate the arts, invest in education, shelter a homeless pet, lend a hand, or even make a wish come true when you pick, click, give to one of Alaska's nonprofits. Visit pickclickgive.org to decide how you will make Alaska better with a small gift from your PFD. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Today, the Obama administration stepped up its efforts to protect public lands. The Bureau of Land Management, which manages about 40 million acres in Alaska, will look at those lands for wilderness value. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar told a news conference at an outdoor equipment store in Denver that he was rescinding a 2003 order by his predecessor, Gail Norton, that stopped the BLM from considering any more wilderness without action from Congress.
So today we're charting a new course. It is a new course for the protection of America's wild lands that recognizes just how important they are to the American people and to the local communities whose economies depend on the great outdoors.
Salazar said he's not trying to take any power away from Congress, but federal land managers need to have the ability to manage what he is referring to as wild lands, which are valued by outdoors enthusiasts, tourists, photographers, and others. Secretary Norton's No More Wilderness order was issued to settle a lawsuit by Utah's then-Governor Mike Leavitt. It's not yet clear if Utah or any other state will try to revive the lawsuit. Salazar's order allows BLM to consider wildland management after going through a public process of land designation. The agency manages 264 million acres nationwide. One of the biggest pieces of BLM land in Alaska is the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, where the oil and gas industry holds a number of leases, and at least one well complex is already sending oil into the Trans-Alaska pipeline. Salazar says there doesn't have to be a conflict there.
I think what is true both about the NPRA as well as with respect to other public lands across the West where there is oil and gas is that there will be oil and gas that will continue to be developed. It's over 40 million acres of land that are already under lease for oil and gas development. What we're doing here is we're putting the wild land wilderness characteristic values of these lands on the same platform so that the wilderness characteristics can be considered in the planning processes of the BLM as it moves forward with the plans for the public domain, which the BLM manages.
Salazar said the MPRA would be reviewed for wilderness values, just like any other BLM land.
This will be a part of what we will look at with respect to that review, and that is which of those areas within the MPRA are appropriate areas for the designation of lands with wild wilderness characteristics.
BLM lands in Alaska include a lot of mining claims, the Denali Highway, the Iditarod Trail, and many other areas. Although he was not ready to respond immediately after the Supreme Court ruled against him yesterday, Joe Miller today released a statement saying he would decide on Monday whether or not to pursue continued legal action in his challenge of the general election outcome for U.S. Senate. Monday's the deadline he faces for making any case in federal court. Miller said all options are being weighed. Those include pursuing constitutional claims in federal court or conceding. The state plans to ask a federal judge to lift a stay and allow it to certify Murkowski as the winner. As Congress travels home for the holidays, the pundits in Washington are analyzing the last few weeks of the lame duck session. And the name of one of Alaska's Republicans is surfacing as a person to watch, Lisa Murkowski. Her recent swing votes in the Senate helped President Obama and Democrats win some of their big priorities. But Murkowski says, don't read too much into it. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Senator Lisa Murkowski was the only Republican to vote for all three of the president's big lame duck priorities, a tax cut compromise, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the New START treaty. She was also one of only a trio of Republicans to support the DREAM Act, a Democratic bill that would have let illegal immigrant children work toward citizenship by going to college or joining the military. On MSNBC Thursday, Politico reporter Ken Vogel said Murkowski's positioning herself to wield influence.
So it's looking increasingly like she could be that power broker who could give Harry Reid and the White House the Republican votes that are necessary to either break a filibuster, give the Democrats a filibuster-proof majority, or even to be a point person on some of these key issues that the Democrats have identified as ones that they'll pursue in the next Congress.
But Murkowski says don't assume she's the president's new Republican ally.
For those that would say that I'm somehow a reliable vote for Obama, I think if you had asked President Obama that at any other point in the year, he would have said not so much. You know, I think back on some of the other votes that we had this year, financial regulatory reform, not there for him, health care reform, not there. So many of the big ticket initiatives that the administration has tried to advance, you know, I just felt were bad policy.
Murkowski explains her recent votes. The tax cut compromise was brokered with Republican leadership, so her vote is in line with many of her colleagues. She says the DREAM Act could matter in Alaska with its strong and growing immigrant population. She points to the advice of military leaders, not the president, that convinced her on the START treaty and influenced her vote on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But bottom line, Murkowski says, she's focused on where Alaskans stand on the issues, like on gays in the military.
That is an issue that I heard from Alaskans throughout the campaign. We received a great deal of correspondence. And on the whole, the support from Alaskans for repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is one that I have been hearing for quite some time. So timing is everything.
Murkowski's recent votes have lined up with Alaska's Democratic Senator Mark Begich. But he says Murkowski's support for some of his priorities say more about the Democrats and how they're not the socialist, liberal group that some on the right have claimed.
I think in the case of Senator Murkowski, you know, she has to make her own decisions as we move forward. But a lot of decisions that are being made, I think, are very moderate issues. They're not extreme. And as the Republicans take over the House, there's a shared responsibility to move our country forward. And I think in the case of Senator Murkowski, I think she sees a lot of these issues. They're issues I've supported, and she's supporting them now, too.
Murkowski was disavowed by the Senate Republican leadership when she launched her write-in bid in September. That's caused speculation on Capitol Hill that she's now rebelling against the party. But Murkowski says the relationship really hasn't changed and that she's not getting pressured by fellow Republicans.
People are very respectful within the conference. If they think that you haven't made up your mind, you know, sometimes you're sitting next to somebody at lunch and they'll say, well, let me tell you what I'm thinking. But when I made my position known on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that was probably about 10 days or so ago. I mean, it was relatively far out in front of the vote. And I got no pressure from any of my colleagues saying, oh my gosh, you know, what are you doing?
Murkowski recently had lunch with the Senate's two most conservative members, who often criticize Alaska's spending projects, Tom Coburn of Oklahoma and Jim DeMint of South Carolina. Also at their table, Senator John McCain, who was fighting Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the START treaty. DeMint was the Senate's biggest supporter of Murkowski's Republican challenger, Joe Miller, and has poured money into his campaign coffers. But the South Carolina senator said on Wednesday that it looks like Murkowski's here to stay, and that he can handle dealing with more moderate Republicans.
No need to keep wishing. We'll work with what we've got.
Murkowski's votes have pegged her in a category of lawmakers in the middle. As the margins in the Senate grow tighter in January, centrist votes, like those of both Murkowski and Begich, will be even more in play. One of the lions of the Senate, Hawaii Appropriations Chairman Daniel Inouye, says both of Alaska's senators can be effective in the Congress to come.
Well, I think Lisa and Mark will do their things. They're good people.
Lisa Murkowski shrugs off a reporter's question of whether her seemingly centrist territory gives her more power.
Still only have one vote. You know, I don't think that power is the right word. I think what happens when it is recognized that you may be more open to listening to another member's perspective on a bill, they'll come and sit down and talk to you. If you send the signal that, you know, I don't ever vote for anything that will ever cost any money, people don't go talk to you.
She says her open door gives her the chance to cooperate with colleagues, something she hopes will benefit both her office and Alaska. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a free firewood program for elders in Southeast.
You can't beat wood heat. I mean, it really feels good on the bones, especially if they're old as mine and beat up as mine.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. And by Penn Air, providing scheduled service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations online at pennair.com.
The state has taken a step to enable enforcement of smoke regulations in Fairbanks. The Department of Environmental Conservation has begun issuing air quality advisories on days when fine particulate pollution levels exceed federal standards. The borough monitors local air quality and issues its own advisories, but its power to regulate use of home heating appliances such as wood stoves was eliminated by voters last fall. DEC Acting Air Quality Division Director Alice Edwards says that's forced the state to step up its role.
The DEC advisories provide another way for people to find out the status of the local air quality. It also allows DEC the ability to follow up on certain compliance concerns that are related to opacity from wood fired heating devices.
Edwards says a state regulation limits dense smoke emissions when air quality is poor.
It states that visible emissions from a wood-fired heating device shall not exceed 50% opacity for more than 15 minutes in an hour in an area when an air quality advisory has been is in effect. So in order for us to follow up on opacity concerns, which have been expressed by many citizens in the community, we need to make sure we have these advisories in effect.
She says the state is following up with some polluters, including around the Wood River School, where there have been numerous air quality complaints. She says there's a process for clamping down on people who are unresponsive.
We may issue a written notice of violation. We could go the route of issuing a nuisance abatement order. Ultimately, we end up, as it progresses, you end up looking at sort of civil penalties and working through the court system.
The borough is already running a successful old stove and boiler removal, repair, or replacement program. Edwards says state and local government also plan to broaden the air quality focus to clamp down on other sources like motor vehicles and power plants. The Environmental Protection Agency requires a Fairbanks fine particulate pollution compliance plan by December 2012. School attendance is a crucial element for student success. More attention has been going to students who continue to miss school at one of the state's most remote school districts, the Lower Kuskokwim School District. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning-Barnes reports.
LKSD is a huge district that includes 27 schools in an area the size of West Virginia. And over the last few years, the district has increased its efforts to deal with students who have chronic absences from school. The district is utilizing the state's truancy law, which says that parents can be fined if their child misses 5 days of school without authorization. LKSD is trying to send out the message to students and their families that attending school is important and constant absences will not be tolerated. Truancy has been a problem in the school district for decades. There are students missing 20 to 30 days of school a year for no approved reason. And it happens to the same students year after year.
Many times we see this profile at a young age.
Carlton Coons has been with LKSD for 31 years. He started out as a teacher and now is the district's assistant superintendent.
We want to make sure that students get off to a good start academically. And that's very difficult if they're behind because they've missed so much school by second grade or third grade. In the long run, when a student is missing 20 or 30 days of school, they're missing a whole year of school every 5 or 6 years.
Since the effort began, the district has fined parents 30 times. But a lot happens before fines come into play.
Every 5 unexcused or unauthorized absences constitutes 1 truancy.
That's state law, so students have to be gone 5 days for no apparent reason before fines are even an option. LKSD starts taking note with the first unexcused absence. Someone at the school is tasked with contacting the parents. Kuhn says this starts to address the problem, and they can find out if there are any issues involved with why the students are missing so many days.
You know, if it's a matter of the student not being able to get up in the morning, if they're staying up too late at night, if there's something that, you know, the school can be helpful with in terms of helping the student to get to school, that's where it begins.
If things don't improve after that, it gets more serious. When students reach the truancy level of 5 unexcused absences, the parents are issued a citation. That can go a few different ways. It can go through the district safety coordinator's office or through the village law enforcement, such as a village public safety officer. Next, it goes to the court system.
The court system is where it is actually heard and the fine is assessed, or community service or that sort of thing.
At that point, it's in the court's hands and it's treated like any other citation. Any fines would go to the state. According to Kuhn's, LKSD's effort started about 8 years ago when the district began addressing the problem. In the last few years, the district's board has made it a priority. The district talks to the school principals, who relay the message to their local school boards. Kuhn says attendance-related efforts are discussed in schools' newsletters that go to the parents. It is also addressed at a yearly district-wide conference that includes all advisory school boards.
The concern is that we do everything we can to decrease the unauthorized absences that we see.
He says LKSD's system is set up to work with the parents to make sure they understand the importance of having a student in school every day, well-rested and well-fed. I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
Alaska is boasting a new look. Well, not exactly the state itself, but rather the commercials designed to lure outside visitors to the state. KSKA's Len Anderson has more.
The new TV ads are part of the Alaska Travel Industry Association's 2011 visitor campaign. They're the first new commercials the association has made since 2003. And while the state's landscape may be timeless, the previous commercial series was not. Ron Peck is the State Travel Association's president and chief operating officer.
Some of the shots of people wearing their clothes and skiing on skis that were from the 90s and RVs from the 90s were just a little dated.
So how does the new commercial series differ?
We've got some fresh music and some great high digital video that we're able to shoot. So it just even presents Alaska as a destination even stronger and more amplified. So we're very excited about it.
The new footage was all provided by Alaskans. The Travel Industry Association's new commercials were made possible by increased state support. Peck says in the face of declining visitor numbers in 2008 and 2009, Governor Sean Parnell proposed adding $7 million to ATIA's expected $11 million appropriation. The 2010 legislature agreed. Peck says as a result, the association increased its image and television budget from $900,000 to over $6 million in FY11. ATI's annual budget still remains well below that of its long-haul vacation rival, Hawaii. That state's travel association spends approximately $80 million a year. The 30-second commercials will air January through March on 7 national cable outlets, including the Travel Channel, National Geographic Channel, the History Channel, and the Discovery Channel. All revolve around the association's theme, Alaska, Beyond Your Dreams, Within Your Reach. Peck says the ads are just one part of the association's efforts to lure visitors to Alaska.
One of the other things that we did with some of that funding is over the last couple of years, we've been upgrading and improving our website, travelalaska.com. Because of that additional money, we were able to move up and accelerate some things in terms of improving that site and allowing individual businesses and destination management organizations such as the Convention Visitors Bureaus in Fairbanks and Anchorage and Juneau and Ketchikan to spread more information about their specific area or region or their specific business.
The improved website has already had an impact.
As a result of accelerating and finishing that site, we've seen an increase of overall traffic and access to individual businesses, our members, by almost 50%.
Peck says while visitor numbers are expected to be up this year, 2012 should see the bigger increase.
That's kind of one of the myths right now going around. Yes, Disney and Oceana and some others are coming, but some of the other large major cruise lines have reduced their capacity next year. The net result is we're only up about 7,500 cruise visitors overall. In 12 is when the big jump is going to come because Princess has announced they're coming back with another large ship. The travel indications are that we'll be up again on independent and highway traffic, which is great news.
The Alaska Travel Industry Association has approximately 1,100 members statewide. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Alaskan News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message is sponsored by the FAA.
A search from the air and on the ground has failed to find a snow machiner missing since last weekend on the Seward Peninsula. Alaska State Troopers say 22-year-old Kenneth Lee of Teller left Brevik Mission and didn't make it to Teller, which is about 5 miles across Port Clarence. 44-year-old Barbara Scholten died in the same area last month after the snow machine she was a passenger on went through the ice. The leader of the Alaska Peacemakers Militia will represent himself in court. At a hearing yesterday, a state judge ruled Schaefer Cox of Fairbanks can serve as his own attorney in a weapons misconduct case. Cox, who started the Second Amendment Task Force and has run for state legislature, is accused of failing to immediately notify police he was carrying a gun during a confrontation with officers earlier this year. He contests the charge, but is also trying to use the case to challenge the legality of Alaska's court system and says he needs to represent himself to do that.
I want to stand in my own capacity because a bar attorney is not allowed to question the jurisdiction of the court. And the jurisdiction of the court to act is the most basic and fundamental step before anything else happens.
Fairbanks District Attorney Mike Gray would not go on tape, but says the defense Cox is making has been heard and rejected many times in courts around the country. This isn't Cox's first time in court. He pleaded guilty in a domestic violence case earlier this year. He says he didn't challenge the court's jurisdiction then because he was threatened with having his child taken away by the state and because he didn't have the information he has now about the illegal nature of the court. About 25 elders in Hoonah got an early Christmas present from Sea Alaska Corporation yesterday when free firewood was delivered to their doorstep. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Sea Alaska Forest Specialist Brian Kleinhens navigates a pickup truck down a narrow, winding Forest Service road outside Hoonah.
Guys like me, you know, a lot of times I sit in the office or I go to the woods and I don't see anybody, and so it's really neat to interface with the folks that we drop it off to and use some service directly.
Kleinhens is talking about Sea Alaska's firewood donation program, which the Native Corporation runs in village communities close to its logging operations. Normally, it involves nothing more than dropping off round logs at a spot in each town and letting residents come split and divvy it up for themselves, first come, first served.
We do similar thing in Cake, and Angoon, and Heidelberg, and Kowak, and Kasan, and Craig.
But once a year, Kleinhens and his co-workers deliver already chopped wood to elders in one of the communities. All the logs are donated by Sea Alaska Timber Corporation, a subsidiary of the main company. In some communities, the wood comes from snags or standing dead trees. In Hoonah, it was trees that had been logged, which the company couldn't sell.
But it's all, you know, wood from Sea Alaska lands and kind of a nice byproduct of some activity going on.
At the Icy Straits Lumber and Milling Yard, Kleinhens and his co-workers are busy splitting round logs using both a hydraulic splitter and the old-fashioned way. Then, with the help of the Hoonah High School basketball team, they load the wood into the back of pickup trucks. The elders who received the firewood had to sign up at the Hoonah Senior Center. One of them was 91-year-old Jenny Lindoff.
I don't have no car, no saw, so it really comes in handy. It's always cold in here.
And with heating fuel running about $4.10 a gallon in the village this winter, Lindoff says there was no shortage of demand.
We eat at the senior center, and they're asking us over there how many people wants wood, you know. And I was surprised there was 21 elders, and there was still some more to go.
Back at the lumber yard, 65-year-old George Dalton Jr. is stacking firewood into the back of his small pickup. He heard the wood would already be split, but he brought his chainsaw just in case, and it sits atop the pile. Dalton is a retired heavy machinery operator with the Public Health Service who lives with his wife and granddaughter. He says they have a Toyo stove, but he prefers wood heat.
You can't beat wood heat. I mean, it really feels good on the bones, especially if they're old as mine and beat up as mine.
Dalton says he's planning to take a load for himself and maybe grab a load for a friend. When someone comments that Dalton's truck bed is kind of small and he might want to come back and grab an extra load for himself, he's not one to argue.
You bet. I'll keep coming until they stop me.
Reporting from Hoonah, I'm Casey Kelly.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Len Anderson in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Fire Island Wind, offering a fuel-free energy alternative to South Central Alaska natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Working late? Hear Alaska News Nightly at any time of the day on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.